Here on Outwork with the Ready, we use Slack to collaborate on nearly every part of making the show.
It's where we share research, talk about listener questions, and plan future episodes. That's because Slack is the AI-powered platform where work happens. It's a place for teams of all sizes to come together so they can be more productive, organized, and creative.
Plus, it adapts to our workflow, not the other way around, offering everything from messaging to audio clips. And for the times we really need to sync up on the finer points of something, Sam and I can jump right into a huddle for FaceTime. No scheduling required.
Now, if only recording our show was that easy.
Right? So whatever you're trying to grow, do it faster and easier with Slack.
Learn how at slack.com.
There are just a lot of people like you who are not well suited to be in contact with other
human
beings.
To being around with other people.
In a synchronous way. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Rodney Evans, and that sleepy guy is Sam Spraylin.
Do I look sleepy? I've tried really hard to not be sleepy, but I might be a little bit sleepy.
I mean, it would be really weird if you weren't a little bit sleepy. Also, do you like that I only got 15 seconds into the episode before I talked about how early it is?
I mean, I figured this is going to be a recurring theme because we're really making some sacrifices here for the good of the show and for the audience.
Welcome back to Outwork with Ready, a podcast about modernizing organizations as the future of work meets the present moment.
Each episode, as you know, we turn our attention to one common organizational pattern that we think is worth digging into. We pull it apart and then propose solutions for what to do instead.
This week, we are talking about asynchronous ways of working. And lest you think that's boring, it's not. It's going to be so interesting. If only because we get to see the depth of Sam Spraylin's nerdery in this topic. But before we do let's do a check-in. I know I could use one.
Yeah, I could too. And the check-in question today is, what is your chronotype and how does it make you feel superior to other people? Chronotype, for those who are unfamiliar with the word, it's like, are you a morning person or are you a nighttime person? So what are you, Rodney?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that. Not this time. So for our listeners, I did an event at 4 a.m. today. So I set my alarm at 3 to get coffee in my face. And then Sam graciously agreed to do a podcast episode early because our schedules were tight this week. Anyhoozle, this isn't the time of day that I sparkle. I think I am at my best sort of mid-morning. I'm like a mid-morning to early afternoon person. If I have anything hard to do or like something where I want to be particularly thoughtful or particularly patient, I have a lot of energy at that time of day. So I tend to do a lot of thinking and reading and exercising and conflict having in the like 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. window. And then it's just like a straight downslope to bed from there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That actually feels very familiar. I think I'm similar. I want to say I'm a morning person, and I think I am, but what I'm learning literally as we speak is that I am a morning person, but not with other people. I'm a morning person by myself kind of guy. You know, some nice reading, drink some coffee, have some thinking, do some sitting, not generally talking to my good friend Rodney about work stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, morning, it's good.
We talk about experimentation a lot on this show.
It's true.
Here it is. True. The experiment is, what is this like at 6? And, you know, TBD, I think, is the answer to that question.
TBD. I mean, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, is that we're both a little bit trepidatious that this might be our best episode ever and that we will have to make this just our new recording time.
I can't do it. My marriage will never survive. My dogs are so confused. This house is not a 5 a.m. house.
All right. I hear you.
All right, Sam. Well, that was delightful.
I'm checked in.
For our listeners, if you haven't left us a review, please go leave us a review. That's the whole review request. I'm making it short to give you the time back to go leave the review. That's how that's going to work. Sam, I'm going to talk about the pattern today that we're going to discuss.
Great.
Okay, great. So when we talk about asynchronous ways of working in organizations, first of all, There is uneven understanding of what that means. So we're going to get into that today. Mm-hmm. And there is a real default in most organizations to synchronous ways of working, which means at the same time, which usually means in a meeting. So the essence of this pattern is that a lot of what we hear is frustrating about work can be traced back to this default of synchronous ways of working. And that wasn't really jiving with how work was happening even before the pandemic. And then during and after the pandemic, it just really highlighted that all synchronous all the time is not the way. There are a lot of better ways to work in ways that match the actual workflow and the job to be done. And we need to explore them in order to learn them and then practice them and have them become the new defaults. And that's what we're going to do today.
We sure are. Even though recording a podcast is a pretty good synchronous activity, we're not modeling it through the act of recording, but I don't think it's actually possible to make an asynchronous podcast. Actually, I take that back. You probably could. Jack, let's talk about it. But for today, we're doing a synchronous podcast about asynchronous work.
But wait, Sam, because we should come back to this, because like Aaron and I, in making this podcast, did a lot of the prep synchronously as well.
You and I and Jack have
a really good operating rhythm for the asynchronous preparation of this podcast. And to me, in the recording of it, I have a lot lower cognitive load because of that asynchronous work. So while you're right that we do physically have to sit here and look at each other's stupid faces to make this thing, we do have a rhythm, I think, that supports this quite well, that uses async tools, an async operating rhythm, and working agreements to do almost all of the preparation before this podcast goes live.
You are so right. Yeah, you are 100% right. And we can just like cut that little clip out and just use it in the future. Just you're 100%
right. We'll
just
loop it and make a whole episode of just Sam saying, you are so right.
Well, and the thing about that as well is that if we had to build this podcast synchronously and then record it synchronously, I would not expect much longevity in terms of my own ability to like continue making this thing. Like the fact that we can asynchronously do our thinking and do all the prep, and then I can marshal my very limited ability to be with other people in real time to just the recording part lets me like actually bring what I am capable of to these recordings.
I think the meaning that I'm making of that is if you had to spend more time with me, you would quit, which is
that's
fair
called
enough,
reading
man.
Between the lines, and you're nailing it. You're absolutely nailing
Again, you're 100% right. Okay, so Sam, why don't you describe this pattern to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think this became really apparent, obviously, as you mentioned, during the pandemic, because of external things going on. We all suddenly had to do more asynchronous work, in theory, at least.
Right.
And most organizations didn't necessarily do it well. And I think most actually resisted as much as they could and just made synchronous things happen remotely or in a distributed way. But there was more and more introduction of the idea of asynchronous work, at least. So I think with this episode, I'm not trying to make the argument that we should be async only or maybe even async predominantly. I don't know. It really depends contextually like what your work actually is. But I think I want us to be thinking about what does it look like to default to async and then have a good reason to not do something async? And what sort of modalities or ways of working does that push us into that are different from what we're experiencing right now?
Yeah, I really like that. I think the only thing I would add to the sort of essence of this pattern is that to me, it is so self-fulfilling. So because the default is to meetings, is to synchronicity, there is very little time left in the day for so many people to do asynchronous work. And then meetings get scheduled and calendared to compensate for the fact that asynchronous work isn't getting done. So for example, when you have a cross-functional project that is unfolding, as most organizations do, the asynchronous game is providing status updates in tools or in, you know, in writing or in video or in recorded or whatever, and then people consuming them asynchronously and then using meeting time for moving work forward. Because nobody has any time to actually get read in properly on anything, then the meetings become the time to update one another, which creates less time for asynchronous work. I say this just because you have to like break the whole pattern. You can't just do more async. You also have to do less stuff synchronously, because if people feel like they have that container and they feel like they have that forcing function, it's always going to be easier to go, oh, I know there will be time in the meeting to read it. Or I know that I'll be caught up when I show up there. Or I know that I'll actually like get to fill in the spreadsheet while someone else is talking. Like if your meetings don't basically force asynchronous work, you're not going to get to the stuff that we're talking about right now.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And that's why this episode is not going to be like a tips and tricks or tools episode. Like, yeah, there are tools that help with asynchronous work, but moving toward a more asynchronous ways of working is not about introducing specific tools.
It's really not.
It's not about like, oh, let's just use Loom and then we'll be asynchronous. No, it's like, it's a fundamental way of understanding the work and getting after the work that is not, unfortunately, as simple as make some videos.
Yeah, totally. Agreed.
All right, so let's talk a little bit more about why it's so pervasive that we stick to this default synchronous way of working in most organizations, even global organizations that have people in literally every time zone in the world, needing to wrestle with the fact that we have not yet cracked the laws of physics and made it such that we can all meet at a very normal working hour time.
That would be so great. Except that it wouldn't be because we would just have more meetings.
Oh, that's true.
So I think that it persists for a lot of reasons. One is that, like, we're lazy. And by that, I mean most systems and teams that I work in and around are lazy in terms of their ways of working. They live with their inherited ways of working that are, like, handed down from wherever they learned them, probably their bosses. Yeah. And they don't really question whether the method matches the work naturally. And so I think part of why it persists is because people don't take the time to think, period, about how work best gets done and what modality or structure would best serve that work. And they don't do that in the container of meetings either. But in the container of meetings, it's easier to convince ourselves that we're doing something valuable because at least we're like all here. We're having a conversation, or someone's having a conversation. So I think it's easier to ignore the lack of clarity, the lack of structure, the lack of design synchronously than asynchronously, where it's like, if there are not clear agreements, clear assets, clear stuff to be shipped, all of that becomes invisible and it's something that requires design.
Yeah, that word you just said, invisible, and it's flip, visible, is so key to this whole conversation because the visibility of synchronous work, I think, is maybe the most important reason that it persists. I'm using a very royal we here, a global we, put a lot of power in just visible work. Like, we're here, we're doing it, and we'll figure it out because that's just how work happens. Versus like, oh, where's Rodney? And you may be off like doing 3 hours of like deep thinking about how to unlock something, how to move something forward. But that is invisible work until at least you create something.
Right.
And that is like one of those pervasive underlying assumptions that has to be talked about or acknowledged for a shift to asynchronous work to actually happen. Do you trust that people on your team, your colleagues, are actually doing work if they are not in a meeting with you talking about that piece of work?
Yeah.
For a lot of people, that answer is no.
Right. And I think that, like, just to get a little philosophical for a second, I agree with you. And I think that that visible work orientation has a lot to do with like visible power structures and it being, you know, meetings are quite performative. And so it gives the platform for the people who like have the most power and make the most money to say the most words typically. And as a result, most organizations orient toward meetings being like very valuable or very important or very useful because they're the forum that reward the power holders. So the kind of work that you're talking about where Rodney disappears for half a day a week to read and think, I think people think of that as being a luxury because I'm like out in the market a lot and I talk about sort of like my own working rhythm. Mm-hmm. And people say to me like, must be nice when I talk about, you know, thinking and reading and the fact that a lot of times in this very office, I will like light a candle and put on music and like put post-it notes everywhere instead of going to a meeting. And people are kind of like, that sounds like the lap of luxury. And I'm like, it's not really though. It's real work and it's harder than just sitting in a meeting and watching a boss put on a show. But that's not generally how work is valued, especially in large companies.
I think I've said this in other episodes, but I think a dirty little secret that most of us don't want to admit to ourselves is that it is easier to go to meetings, even bad ones, than it is to structure your 100%. Own working like decisions about what do I have to do and how do I move it forward. Not always, but I mean, more than we would probably want to admit to ourselves, like we're happy to just roll up to a meeting, especially a meeting that's not a lot is expected from us and just kind of like be there. And I learned this for myself because occasionally in the course of working with a client, I will need to come to a meeting where maybe I'm just observing or like it's early in a project, so we're not actually doing anything with the meeting where there is no expectation for me to do anything. And I have noticed in myself this little sense of like, oh, this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
I have 60 minutes here where I don't really need to engage. I can just kind of sit back and I could see how I could be convinced to maybe go to a couple more of those meetings every week. Nice little mental break.
Yeah. Where and you're technically working, but not actually working.
Exactly.
Yeah. Sign me up.
Like I can like mentally like check. Yeah, I just did an hour towards my 8 hours today.
Right.
Look at me go. I mean, I would imagine if I had like six of those every day, I'd be like, okay, enough. But they're a nice little break here and there.
Totally. And especially when you are faced with doing something hard, like I'll give you an example, a very recent example from last week. You know, you and I have been jamming on the future of HR talk, and we did a session a million years ago, and we sort of charted the landscape. We did a little bit of asynchronous work, and then we met one more time, and we filled in the stuff. And I was like, thanks for the partnership, Sam. I got it from here. You know what I did then? Nothing at all until I was contacted and contracted to give that talk, at which point I had to do the light a candle sticky note thing and make a fucking speech with a deck. Thank you, Alicia, et cetera, et cetera. The part where you and I were in a mural board together being like, let's think about what this could be, it was super fun and really easy. The part where I had to actually like sit here and create a 30-minute coherent narrative that didn't make the same point more than once and had research and visuals and an arc was very, very hard, which is why I left it to the Saturday before my talk and spent the better part of a day doing it. I say this because even where synchronous work is valuable and creative, it's still often easier than the solo work that's required to really like finish something or really make something or really ship something. The part where we like get together and jam, and I used to joke about this. I used to sort of give people at the ready shit. We've gotten so much better about it. But there was a period of time where I joked all the time about the jam vortex because I just felt like people were scheduling meetings to jam. And I was like, does anything ever come out of that black hole or is it just swirling jam forever? Because the part where you make use of it and turn it into something consumable is really hard. It's really hard for most people.
Yeah. I love that because I think then to a lot of our clients, and I think they are in endless jam vortexes or whatever the phrase was that you used yeah. there, where a lot of the meetings kind of look like, yeah, exactly, a jamnado. They look like just jams. And then if we're lucky, a decision falls out accidentally or a next action maybe gets captured. And then the next time we jam, we have a little bit of a different flavor to it because somebody maybe did something, but there's not a whole lot of structure. And I think that is another thing about the asynchronous work that makes it uncomfortable is that good asynchronous work actually requires a lot of structure.
Yeah,
like really understanding what are we trying to do here? What does the output of this endeavor look like? How can you contribute to it asynchronously? What sort of feedback? How do you give that feedback? Where do you show up and how do you show up to that? That requires a lot of thought and structure. And it's kind of the antithesis of a jamnado, where you can just kind of like show up, be creative, be amiable, and you can move on to your next thing.
Yeah. You know, I'm learning something in our discussion of this. This is the most I've ever talked about this. First of all, I think there's some kind of like hierarchy of synchronous meetings, and it's like the status update is the worst one.
Right.
The jamnado is maybe like the second worst one. There's a bunch of other bad ones, but there are degrees of badness in terms of the meeting itself. But what I'm realizing as I'm listening to you, Sam, is I really love synchronous moments that do the whole thing they're supposed to do and are not just the spinning up of a bunch of asynchronous work. I think too many meetings are for like, we're going to create a bunch of next actions that happen outside of here. And I'm realizing in this conversation that actually my favorite meetings are the one where it's like, we are going to come together and make this decision. And then that's it. Or we're going to come together and have this retrospection. Or we're going to come together and talk about this thing as inspiration or for learning or whatever. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Like even though sometimes it's necessary, and the podcast creation is a good example of things that sort of pop between sync and async, I love meetings that are not just meant as the producer of a shitload of async tasks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I think there's individual differences in all of these things because I do like those as well, but I have found in myself because the Ready is a relatively healthy asynchronous environment.
For sure.
I also find it very pleasing to go to a meeting where I'm feeling like I am blocked on something and then I leave that meeting feeling unblocked and like clear to like I can now go spend my 3 hours of thinking to like move stuff forward. And I think it probably really depends on like the type of work and whether there's a whole team behind it or whether it's like a solo thing that I just need input on from others. But the fact that we are a pretty healthy async environment lets us do both, I think.
Yeah, I think that's true.
If I didn't have any time or space to do any asynchronous work, going to a meeting where we just spun up a bunch of asynchronous work would feel like a joke. And I worry that that's what most organizations, they tell themselves like, okay, and then we'll go do the work. And then I have 7 hours of meetings today and the work doesn't happen or it happens during the meeting that I'm going to next. And you get into a really weird like Ponzi scheme of like paying off your time in the next meeting that you're in.
It is a Ponzi scheme. And then also to that exact point, when the calendar is already jammed, then I feel like the meetings get added just to create accountability. So it's like we have the meeting, we spin up a bunch of tasks, there's no time to do them. So we schedule another meeting to check in on whether they're done, which they're not, or to create a forcing function and accountability for people to get them done by that day, which is like that's just not ideal. What else in terms of why this nastiness persists?
I'm always trying to like identify the stuff that I'm experiencing at the Ready that makes async work hard, just because async work can be hard no matter the environment, versus the stuff that is truly unique to a more bureaucratic kind of legacy organization. And I think this one is one that I have not personally experienced, but I have seen it now in a couple of different places where when you're working asynchronously, you are generating writing or some sort of artifact. in an unhealthy kind of toxic environment, that can be used against you. Yeah. If it is in writing, then we can say like, oh, Rodney made that decision. Let's go get Rodney. She's the one who fucked this up.
Yeah.
And when nothing is in writing and it's only in conversation, then it's very like, who knows? Like things happen. It's not my fault. And so there's very much a covering your assness to working synchronously.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that there are roles in organizations that really exacerbate that. I mean, I just had an article published that was talking about why it is so difficult to retire organizational debt when that concept is not new and people are very familiar with the feeling of it, but like why it is so hard to upend. And I feel like there are a lot of middle managers in the world who are struggling to have the kind of role that really creates value. And so what they do is schedule meetings. They schedule synchronous time because they are not generating physical work. They do not have their hands on keyboards to create anything except emails and calendar invites. And it's a real issue. And it's a real issue for a variety of reasons, but like one of which is that it makes the organization worse and it takes the time that should be shipping. And two is, and this is, I'm seeing this in several places right now, it habituates people to believing that that is a real job that is necessary. That the job of checking other people's work and calling everybody into a meeting to go through the project plan and check on status is a meaningful job that someone should have, which it is
and
not.
And
they should not.
A shared responsibility that we have as being a member of this team who care about the output of what we are making.
Yeah. And could do the status thing in tools and use our time together to unblock each other or to get advice or to write things down. And instead we have managers whose job it is to go like, Sam, I noticed that your line in the Excel sheet is yellow. Do you want to tell us when we'll have that?
Well, actually, it's like, Rodney, bro, it's amber. So
it's you're right. It is amber. When did they wait, is it red, amber, green, or are there other names for the other colors too?
Oh, I don't, I've only heard
crimson,
red,
amber,
green.
Okay.
That's a good point. I don't know. I don't actually know. There's probably that some sort of innovation out there around the naming of green and red.
I was going to say there's room here for, for evolution. So tell us, tell them what it costs, Sam. It's the opposite of tell them what they've won. Why is this a bad pattern, what we're describing?
So many reasons. I mean, so if we actually care about like doing great stuff, creating amazing work, products, being successful as an organization, then I think it's hard to look at a synchronous only way of working and say like, this is particularly efficient. Like we're getting the best out of our folks by defaulting to having to be in a room, digital or otherwise, to move work forward. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's just a really inefficient way to get work done.
Yeah, I think that's true. I also think that in pursuit of having teams and organizations where people can do their best work, it is a real blunt instrument. There are just a lot of people like you who are not well suited to be in contact with other human
beings. To being around with other people.
In a synchronous way. That doesn't mean that you don't have value in the organization, Sam. That doesn't mean that we don't appreciate you. But in all seriousness.
Are you putting me on a performance improvement plan right now?
You're the one who told me I was fired because I couldn't open my calendar. So you're like, this is how we tell you.
Yeah.
Everybody's fired. I do really think from an equity perspective and, you know, we've learned a lot more at the Ready about accessibility and accessibility and facilitation practices in the last few years, especially because we have a couple of colleagues, particularly led by Tanisi, who has been on the pod before, who have focused a lot on this. Yeah. And it's just like meetings with talking are suited for a type of person. And look, I am one of those people. Like I am highly extroverted. I'm highly verbal. I enjoy interaction with human beings. It does not make me uncomfortable or anxious. And that is one of many, many, many work styles that are valid and necessary in the workplace. And I think synchronous work is very much designed and preferences people who are more self-assured, more verbal, more articulate, more extroverted, etc., in a way that, like, it's not equitable and it's bad for performance. It's just bad for performance because you're putting half or more of the population into a format where they can't do their best work.
Yeah, exactly. I very much agree with you on that. And it makes me think of, so you just kind of described the diversity of people who are expected to work in a synchronous way. And then I'm now thinking about the diversity of types of work that in a synchronous only way of working, we are lumping all of those together. And being like, yeah, the best way to move this piece of work forward is to come together for a 60-minute meeting. And the best way to move this other very different type of work forward is to come together in a 60-minute meeting. And like, of course not. Like, those are very, very different things.
Yeah.
So like, let's match the tool to the task at hand.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I think is bad, and you made a comment in here about burnout that I want to hear more about, but I think that there's something about the feeling of synchronous work and meetings that is similar in a lot of ways to a lot of the other sort of default and traditional OS trappings, which is it is kind of like the short-term solve, and it orients us to a very transactional, very intra-moment kind of satisfaction. And what I mean by that is I can come out of that brainstorming session with you on the future of HR speech and be like, woo, that nailed felt it.
We're almost there.
Great. Just we're almost there. And the truth is that like the deeper, harder work was the sitting down and really marinating and really pondering and doing a lot of like physical creation of stuff. And also that is the more satisfying work. But like you don't get the dopamine hit of like, I went to the meeting, I filled out the sticky notes, I went home, done. Let's never think of this again. It requires a different orientation of like, I am going to feel satisfaction from the depth of my own thinking and creation of something. But that is not going to happen at a surface level in 45 minutes in the same way. So I see that in a lot of org design. There's this very short-term, very task-oriented, very dopamine-giving way of working that does not actually serve knowledge work very well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely, completely agree. Do you want me to hit that burnout idea real quick?
Yeah.
So I've worked on a couple of clients now that are global organizations, at least so one US based, but one not US based, actually New Zealand based. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, you have global teams who want to get together to do synchronous work, which means somebody is having a horrible time.
Yeah,
somebody is on a meeting at 11 p.m. or 4 a.m., both of which I have regularly done on those projects. And even organizations that see this as a problem and try to be equitable and move that horrible time around, one group, usually non-HQ related, is getting the short end of that stick more often than HQ.
Yep.
And that's just really tough. And like everyone's doing their best. And if you feel like you have to get together to do something, then you're burning a match to make that happen. So let's be really judicious about when we ask somebody to get online at 11 p.m. because it's absolutely the best use of their time, and not invite somebody to an 11 p.m. meeting to hear a status report. Yeah. That would destroy my brain if I had to do that multiple times a week just because I happen to be situated in a time zone where it's most convenient for my colleagues to invite me to that time.
Yeah.
But also, sometimes you got to be together. You just gave a talk at 4 a.m.
I like, did. And it was like, very interactive, and it couldn't have just been recorded, and fair enough.
So sometimes horrible times have to happen, but let's just make sure they're happening for good reason.
Right. So let's fix it. What should we do, What should we do instead? You go first. Give us an idea.
Well, here's 10 tools that will... Just kidding.
Although sponsored I am about by Loom.
To talk about a tool.
I'm just kidding. We're not. But also, Loom, you should sponsor us. Call us.
I mean, they absolutely should, because I was actually going to talk about tools like Loom. I don't actually care if it's Loom or not.
Great.
What I am talking about is developing working agreements and a culture of short videos that we share with each other and watch asynchronously. This is definitely something that we did not do in the early days of the Ready, partially because at first we were totally synchronous. So
right.
the best video is a real life conversation. But we have learned to really lean into this a little bit more. And I did not like it at first because I think people talk slow. And I think people
Speed
are not particularly, exactly. But I think in the very beginning, like there was like not really the ability to speed up, but there absolutely is now. They do it really well.
Yeah.
So I watch everything on 1.5 speed. And the real unlock, as they say, is the AI generated transcripts.
Yeah.
Here's a dirty little secret. I haven't actually watched a video in like 3 months. I only read the transcripts. Mm. Unless I get to a point in the transcript where I'm like, it's having a hard time here. What the hell is Rodney saying? Then I'll go back and watch it. But I will do an initial pass of just reading the transcript. And if I feel like I got it, then I'll just roll with that. And I think if it's not a emotional sort of moment that we're trying to have, where we're trying to connect as people, but it's a information sharing moment, that works just as well too. And I know for a lot of folks, the idea of sitting down and writing a 3-page thing versus turning on your camera and talking for 3 minutes, those are very different lifts, and it's much easier to just like say the thing. So
right.
I think there's a lot to be done with the sharing of video, with, you know, doing a screencast and like walking somebody through a thing that you worked on. I've done that a couple of different times where it's like, hey, I did this, this, and this. If you want to pick up this piece of work, here's where you could work on next.
Yep.
It's a 2-minute video. They're very clear about what the next thing is. So there's something about tools like that that I think opens the possibility for doing asynchronous work in a way where you're not necessarily losing that high fidelity conversation that you get in a conversation.
Yeah. Two things I love about that. One is going back to our earlier conversation about various styles. I always watch the video, mm-hmm. not read the transcript because of retention. I am an audio-based learner, and my highest information retention is if I am doing something mindless with my hands and listening. So I love what you just said, because again, in terms of like default ways of working, it's not assuming that there is only one way that works. Maybe for someone else, it's visual, and seeing my face on a video is the thing that is memorable. But even in what you just said, you have three styles that are taken care of all at one time, which is super, super cool. The other point that you made about like the length of time of writing something versus video, I think yes. And I also know for myself, what's very true about that is I'm a very fast writer in terms of getting my ideas down. But when I'm writing for a big audience and I'm worried about tone or how it's interpreted, I tend to spend a lot more time on the messaging. I feel like in a Loom or in a recorded pitch, I can be a lot more informal because I don't have to worry that people are going to misinterpret my tone because they literally can hear it. And so to your point, some people just are fucking slow writers, and that's one thing. And then other people are anxious about how they'll be received, and that is also very time consuming. And so I just think that like Looms or like, you know, a lot of people at the Ready use voice memos in Slack just so that the tone is conveyed. I really like that. Yeah. And I think there's like a lot even underneath the efficiency part of it.
Yeah. And all of this too, what we're talking about, if you take like one step back, it's matching tool to the context.
Yeah.
So sharing an update on something, maybe a quick Loom, one take, great. Like documenting a very important decision that required like a lot of thinking and it's going to live in perpetuity in the system. Well, maybe actually the clarity that writing requires is actually the right move there.
Right.
It's about knowing which tool for which situation.
I agree. I like that.
This is a potential rabbit hole, so we don't have to get into it. What's your take on recording a meeting? Do you actually watch recorded meetings?
I don't.
I don't either. If I'm in a position where I can kind of coach a team on this, I will usually say, let's have a rotating scribe who will actually write down the important parts of this meeting and then share it with whoever was not here. Because I get weird feelings about recording a meeting being enough for like transparency or like for inclusion for people who can't be there. Because I don't know, there's only one thing worse than being in a bad meeting is watching a bad meeting. So I don't, I don't know. I got to think more about that. That might just be my U.S. centrism and the fact that most meetings happen during my working hours kind of speaking to or yeah. coming out here. But that's just a thing that's sitting with me.
And it might be better than nothing. If you're in a different right. time zone and you can't catch it, maybe a recorded meeting is better than not having any access. But I'm with you. And I will intend to watch them. I will intend to watch always. Meetings that I miss.
I always
and
have
I don't.
A list of them.
Yeah.
I think the transcriptions.
I think it's because they're too long.
Yeah. Yeah, they're too long. And I do think this is transcriptions continue to get better. Thank you, AI. I think they become more useful because you can easily kind of scroll to where the important part happens and then get to the meat of it.
Right. Totally.
All right. What else should we try instead?
I think a good way to start to break your addiction to synchronous meetings is to use the time to do work asynchronously, but with the group of people that would otherwise be in a meeting. So
Make stuff time.
That's what we call it. Use the weekly shitty status meeting. Keep it on the calendar, but repurpose it so that everybody is making stuff at that time and have the accountability structure be some kind of ship at the end or readout at the end or even 5 minutes on a Zoom at the end to talk about what you did to get people in the habit of for real working at that time. And I don't mean because I think people are lazy. I think because people aren't used to doing that kind of deep work.
I love make stuff time, by the way. But I think it's such a good like middle step to more of an asynchronous way of working. Like, yeah, there is a meeting on your calendar and we are all going to show up to it. So it looks synchronous. But we're actually using that time to asynchronously work on maybe multiple pieces of work at that same time. Are you familiar with the Pomodoro method?
I sure am.
So, you know, 25-minute working blocks, a 60-minute meeting, 25 minutes, 5-minute block. Second Pomodoro. Two Pomodoros in one meeting with a little break in the middle. It works pretty great.
Yeah, I love that. What other ideas you got, Sam?
Mine is, again, a little bit tool-centric, but I guess it's...
I love that you were like, we're not going to talk about tools. All my ideas are about tools.
Yeah. But I'm hopefully talking about them in a nuanced way.
You are. You're doing a great job.
Poke me. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Working in tools where we are working on the same version of something is huge. And I feel like this is almost worth not talking about.
Maybe people don't do this.
Right. Well, I was just about to say, like, this was much worse a few years ago. And I feel like even Microsoft Word now has good collaboration if you're like on a relatively new version of it. Like Google Docs obviously is kind of the standard here. But I've definitely seen working environments where people are sending versions back and forth. And if you have to do that, it's really hard to work asynchronously, really hard. I would almost say like it's a deal breaker in many cases. Like it requires such mental load to figure out if you're working on the right one. And then God forbid two versions get going with the latest and somebody has to reconcile them. Like that overhead is just not worth it. So that's the battle that you should probably fight first if you're trying to become more asynchronous. If you do have tools where you can be in the same version together, then developing working agreements around suggestion mode and leaving comments and is the working agreement that you have to respond to every single comment or not. Like those sorts of things can make the difference in whether or not working asynchronously feels good and productive versus like a chore.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. That's cool.
And I would argue if your team is kind of big, set up a working agreement where like have clarity around whose document this actually is. Who's the decision maker? Mm. What's the decision right on this thing that we're making?
Yeah.
Get clear about that. And then don't have a culture where that person feels like they have to respond like in writing to every comment that shows up.
Yeah.
If you have 10 people on a team and everybody's leaving 5 comments on a doc, that's 50 things for them to go through. Like that can all be very valuable, but just create an environment where it's okay to just be like, yep, resolved.
Heard.
Yeah. All right, cool. Got one last idea for us?
I do. And this is a little different than what we've talked about, but kind of related to our check-in question today. To the extent that people are designing their own work, so this is less about like the larger organizational design, but in terms of your own personal workflow and productivity in the day, I think that it's really helpful to match the work to be done with the calendar asynchronously. And what I mean by that is, like, for example, in our Slack instance at the Ready, we have a channel called README, we have a channel called Market, and we have a channel called Made. And I find that the content in those channels is stuff that usually takes me longer to process, because it tends to be like full articles or a full mural board with a facilitation guide. Like, it's not a quick message. It's something that's deeper. And so I have calendar blocks often that are just for getting through the stuff from those channels that I was interested in. So I have created my own asynchronous workflow to use the asynchronous tools effectively, because what's not an effective use of Slack is popping between DMs, quick hits, easy responses, and a 16-page research study all in one 15-minute block. Right. So, like, I think a way of getting at this is just think about the work to be done. Is it a thing that requires real focus and attention for you? And create a time that is right for that. And, like, I have one calendar block a week where I just deal with all my emails. And then I mostly ignore them. I have one calendar block a week where I read the shit that you all post. I just think matching your time to the async work to be done really helps it to not feel overwhelming or chaotic.
100%. One of my favorite kind of personal rhythms that I've created is that Fridays are when I go through Made. Colleagues are like making cool stuff all the time. I want to understand what the thing is that they made and how I might be able to use it in my own work. And the mental state that I need to do that is not like in the thick of it on a Tuesday with the client. I need to like have some space for that. Do you try to match it to your day? Like, so you talk about being a morning person, or like your ideal is like late morning to early afternoon. Are you scheduling that stuff for like when you're at your best or for when you're at your worst?
I schedule it for when I'm at my best, because it takes more energy for me to fully process and understand a colleague's work or a research study than it does for me to facilitate a meeting. So I'd rather do the meeting facilitation opposite at 3 p.m. when I have an eighth of a tank left of gas than at 10 o'clock in the morning when like everything is really firing.
Yeah. And I feel like I need to be geared up to be with people. So let's try to put that when I'm at my best. And when I'm at my worst, I can read, I can think, I can write. But let's try to reserve that.
I love that.
All right, so let's wrap up here for today. I've got some asynchronous work that I need to go get done before my first meeting of the day, because it's still only 7:30. We're always looking for new topics for the show. So if you have an organizational pattern that you're having trouble changing or just want to hear us riff on for a little bit, shoot us a note at podcast@theready.com.
This show is engineered by Taylor Marvin and produced by Jack Van Amberg. At Work with the Ready is created by The Ready, where we help organizations around the world change the way they work. Thank you for listening.